the Rise Up See Red podcast, all about the Arizona Cardinals and the NFL, featuring insider and outsider perspectives. Enjoy the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Now here are your hosts, Jess Root and Seth Cox.
Hello, Arizona Cardinals fans, and welcome to the latest edition of the Rise Up See Red podcast. I'm your host, Jess Root from CardsWire.com, the U.S. Today NFL Wire site covering the Arizona Cardinals, with my co-host Seth Cox from RevengeOfTheBirds.com, SB Nation's Arizona Cardinals site, and also one of the hosts of the original Draft Breakdown podcast. We took a week off after having multiple shows, and we're only going to have one this week as we hit starting to be a little bit dead part of the offseason, but there is content to discuss, mainly, and that is dealing with DeAndre Hopkins. That's what we're going to lead with this show. Episode 426, we're going to talk to you, Hopkins, what it means, what does that say about a receiving core. We're going to talk about Buda Baker, the latest with him, and do we want to call this what everyone else is calling it, a tank job? So that's what we're going to start with. So DeAndre Hopkins released on Friday. I was in a bookstore because who was expecting any sort of news on a Friday morning? I was in a bookstore, cleaning out my house. I had a whole bunch of books. I took it to Half Price Books to sell / donate, whatever. And, of course, DeAndre Hopkins gets released, so I had to sit down and write stuff on my phone. I was not expecting it, but it wasn't altogether a surprise, even though it means the Cardinals say goodbye to Hopkins with zero return.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the more we learn about the situation, the more we understand why that's what happened. And I recommend, you know, checking out the things that Jess and I have skimmed from, you know, Albert Breer mostly, but, you know, other people have come through with some thoughts as well. But especially, you know, go to the SI article Albert Breer wrote, where he basically laid it all out. Like, there was legitimately two teams that explored trading for him.
And, but there was never a real offer.
Well, and there were two teams that the Cardinals allowed him to talk to anybody he wanted to talk to. And there were two teams that came to talk to him, the Buffalo Bills and Kansas City Chiefs. And both basically walked away going, yeah, not going
to
happen.
Well, and it all came down to the contract. So they never offered that. There was like we're talking about the Cardinals.
Oh yeah, it wasn't from the Cardinals' perspective.
Right.
It was legitimately from DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, so it wasn't like a case where some might have speculated is that the Cardinals played chicken. It's like, oh, they were offered a third round pick there, so that's not enough. It's not enough. They never got an offer because it was always the contract. The Bills were interested, the Chiefs were interested, but unless his contract was redone, and the Cardinals had a sticking point there. They weren't going to do that. They weren't going to eat some of that money because
But that was the thing. They legitimately also offered to take on some of the contract, but it obviously wasn't worth enough
right.
to take on too much. And so in the end, what happened was, and I thought Breer put it very well, is he still a very good player? Absolutely. Is he a guy worth 20? I mean, it's 19 and a half, but 19 and a half million. Literally the whole NFL said, nope, not worth it. And whether you and I agree with it or not, that's just the reality of the situation. And I thought that, you know, we had heard through the grapevine that the Cardinals were, you know, willing to take less than their initial asking, which was a day two pick and a player. But it never even got to that point.
Right. It's not like anyone offered them. It was all about the money. That before any offer came dealing with the contract, and nobody wanted to pay DeAndre $19 million this year.
Right. Or, you know, and so the offers he received, if you go back and look, they were all very low base pay offers based on, and then he would get paid based upon his production. And the reality was he didn't want to do that. That's a decision players make all the time, right? Like,
yeah,
they make decisions based on those things all the time. And the truth of the matter is you can't control that or decide for them. But this is, which is ironic that he's never had an agent, because this is pretty like standard 101 agent stuff, right? Like that's pretty much how agents function, is they're like, oh, you're out of guaranteed money, you need to hold out until you get more guaranteed money. And he's basically done that every single time it comes to this juncture in his contract status. And he did that in Houston, and now he's doing this again in Arizona. And it's, you know, unfortunate, but it's also the reality. And you know, when the Texans traded him, he was coming off his third straight first team All-Pro season. Now he's coming off back-to-back seasons where he played a total of, what, 19 games in two seasons?
Yeah.
He's still very productive in those 19 games. But, you know, there are metrical downticks, which are, you know, which is
well, and he's 30 going on 31, and
he has a PED now.
Yes, and if you look at statistically about the receivers throughout the league, even the great ones, you will almost always see a sharp decrease in production after that point. Even Fitz did it, but then bounced back because of position change and a role kind of change. But like at age 31, receivers begin to die, basically.
Right. And so I think it's a really interesting juxtaposition / conundrum. It's always fun, you know, for you and I, obviously, to see how players deal with this, because as you and I have always said, we side with the players in all of this. You know, when they want money, when they want things like that, we're always on the player's side. But this is a little bit different, because now you're getting kind of a inside look at the mind of an athlete and what really matters to them. And fans tend to have this Pollyanna view of, well, they're all about winning. Maybe they like to win, but mostly they like to be paid an exorbitant amount of money to play a very difficult game. And that's kind of where Hop is at right now, right?
Yeah.
He's, you know, you talked about chicken, right? He's the one playing chicken at this point, because the Cardinals have basically no leg to stand on. You know, obviously now he's gone for sure. Like, you know, the transaction went through on Tuesday, but the Cardinals were basically like, they floated for 4 days that, hey, just make an offer. You can have DeAndre Hopkins. And the entire NFL was like, no, we're good. we'll wait. And so now it's going to be like, okay, what happens? Does a team say, oh, you know what? I'll give him an Odell Beckham type of deal. Or does a team say, you know, Odell's older, less productive, and hurt as often, but he doesn't have the PED. He doesn't have kind of... I think, you know, something, and you and I never question players' health, so I don't want anybody to think we're questioning this. But I you know, we had heard that there was a rift based on his not playing the final two games of the season.
Yeah, that was perhaps was the reason why restructuring his deal was not very much palatable, because they didn't want to give him more money when he quit on the team, essentially. And we understood, so we don't know how healthy he was. There obviously was a knee, but basically it came down to he sat out the final two games when he could have played. When the team was still trying to win, they weren't hopeless. Like, this was a team, these bunch of players, coaches fighting for their lives, and they didn't have one of the best. They didn't have their best player.
Right. And you know, again, fans love the idea of, and the romanticism of sport, and we all do. I mean, that's why we do this. But the reality kind of comes in too is that these guys are, one, human, two, that they have a job that they get disgruntled with just like we do. I guess the biggest difference is that if two games would basically be the equivalent of me not showing up to work for like 3 months, right? But like, we don't have those options. And so, you know, that's what they end up kind of focusing on, unfortunately. And we'll see how this all works out. But I think right now we're in a spot where this was best for the Cardinals as an organization, as they continue to try to build something that guys are buying into.
Yeah. Now, the thing that we get from the Hopkins release is cap space this year and no dead money next year. That's why the timing of it happened. They didn't need the cap space. They are already one of the league leaders in cap space. They had about $16 million. Now they've got about $24 million. They take out a ton of dead money this year. But the great part is that, and this is the part why when we talked about trading him, that trading him in season wasn't nearly as attractive, because once you cross that June 1st mark, that means his contract is going to affect the Cardinals for two seasons. And we kind of felt that's what they wanted to do, is to get it off the books, and that eventually trade was going to happen in the draft. But when it didn't, okay, well, maybe. But the release, while it was a surprise, was not surprising to me, because it shows that, and we're going to talk a little bit more of that later, is like, the priority isn't 2023. The priority is complete flexibility in 2024, and so they will eat that contract. Now, one, they couldn't post June 1st designate him, but they could have waited till tomorrow, waited till Friday to make the cut, and then gotten more cap space. But it's not about cap space this year. It's about cap space next year and giving them maximized flexibility to be a big player in 2024.
Well, and yeah, we're going to talk about this shortly, but like, the biggest thing is when you make a move like this, or however you want to look at it, right? The biggest thing becomes that what happens to the team, what happens to the players in the locker room, and what message are you sending, right? Like, that, oh, are we tanking? You know, that's a big question. But for the Cardinals, this was something that you and I have literally talked about for years, that this was always coming. The reconciling of Steve Keim's contract structuring was coming. We knew that he put them in a precarious position every year. And when you're the guy that has to answer for poor play or things like that, you tend to be like, well, I need to make sure that we're good enough to compete. Whereas if you're Monty Ossenfort, you go, hey, it's year one. Here's my plan for you. And it's, you know, 3, 5, whatever, however many years do you want to expand it for. But in year one, whether it's a 3-year plan or a 5-year plan, we're fixing your cap. That's literally the first thing we're going to do. And we've said that for years, that this continual, like, hey, let's move this money here. Let's move this money here. Let's, you know, oh, we're going to cut Jordan Phillips, but you know what? We'll pay him out. I mean, think about it. They're literally paying Jordan Phillips $6 million this year to just not be on the roster. All of that was going to eventually bite them, and it did. And now you have a new guy in Monty Ossenfort that's able to go, huh, I didn't do all this, so you know what? I'm okay just kind of eating crap for a year, knowing that I've got something better coming.
Yeah, yeah, totally.
And that, like you said, that has been needed desperately. The decision was made, and now, you know, we'll see how it works. But if that was Steve Keim, if Keim was still, you know, around, they cut DeAndre Hopkins, that money would have 100% been spread out over what, 2-3 years. They would have restructured him to trade him, been like, look, I got a 4th-round pick for him, you know, and we redid his deal, and the Cardinals are paying, you know, $9 million, you know, they're paying $19 million this year, $9 million next year, and $6 million in 2025. And we would have been like, what are you doing to get a 4th-round pick? Like, what is happening?
Yeah, totally. Coming up next on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. Let's talk about potential landing spots for Hopkins. That's coming up next on Rise Up C-Red. We're back on the Rise Up C-Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. Cardinals no longer have DeAndre Hopkins. Now it's a case of where he lands. We know what he wants. He wants stable management. He wants a quarterback who loves the game, and he wants a championship defense. He wants to win. He also wants to get paid, apparently, because he looked at the $15 million that Odell Beckham got, who didn't play last, and he's like, I deserve that much. Where do you think he lands? There's all sorts of different odds going around right now. I don't have the odds numbers up right here. Oh, DeAndre's next time. Let's see what the Bills are the favorite him in terms of betting odds.
So that's shifted a little bit.
So let me see. Here's where, and this is as of when this published. Oh, this was published a couple days ago. It says Bills +200, Chiefs +300, Cowboys +5, Patriots +700, and those. So yeah.
So when he was released about a week ago, we're recording on a Thursday morning. When he was released a week ago, Dallas was number one, KC was number two, Carolina was 3, Baltimore 4, Buffalo 5, and I should fix that. 1, 2, and 3 are separated a little bit, and then 4 through 8 were all 7-1 odds, and that was Baltimore, Buffalo, New England, Philadelphia. So the odds are shifting, because I think part of it is, like you said, they, one, don't know who wants it. I mean, literally, teams have been able to do anything for him or with him, and nobody's really pursued him vigorously. Like, right. It's basically been like, we'll see what happens.
Cut down to like, money, too, because here's the thing. If cap space. So the Chiefs, he'd love to play with the Chiefs, and the Chiefs were a perfect fit for him because they need a big-time receiver. Look what they did. They won a championship without a big-time receiver. And but they have 652,000 in cap space. 600, like less than a million. So like even a league minimum deal is going to put them over. There's no way for them to fit unless they do some stuff. Never mind, even if they do the $15 million to Odell Beckham, who I think it gets $12 million up front, and then they added five void years. So they're going to have to pay the Piper next year for the cap. So this year it ends up being, I think it's a $5 million cap hit, and that was like crazy creative cap space. The Chiefs, $652,000. The Bills have $1.4 million in cap space only.
But that's what I'm saying, that when this is a great litmus test for fans to see, because Hopkins has the opportunity. I mean, they could have gotten something done. Let's be honest. They literally could have gotten something done before the draft, right after the draft. Immediately, but it's Hopkins' sticking point of money. Like, that's literally what is holding everything up. And we're talking about a guy that's made over $111 million in his career. And again, like, everybody's got different things and motivations and things like that. But that's why I think this is such a fun kind of litmus test of, oh, is this about money or is this about your, you know, career? Is this about winning? Like, what is it about? Because most fans want to believe that Hopkins would be like, you know what? I'm going to take less money to go play for that Chiefs team, right? Like, when they signed Donovan Smith to like a $9 million deal, that could, I mean, easily that could have been Hopkins. He didn't want to do that. And so now you're getting the question of like, what is this guy's motivation? Well, I can tell you what his motivation is. He's basically said it. It's money. Like, yeah, he doesn't want to play for the Cardinals. He doesn't want to play for the Texans. He doesn't want to play for those teams. Okay. But does he want to play for the Bills bad enough to take, you know, like you said, I don't even know what the veteran minimum is.
It'd
like
end up being, I think, 1.1. I think it's 1.165 is league minimum.
Yeah. Yeah. So take a sign a veteran minimum deal with incentives up to 17, 18 million. Well, no, he won't. I mean, he's basically told us that he believes he deserves more. So it's going to be interesting if he comes off of that and says, you know what? I want to win. I've made $110 million in my career. What matters to me now is finding that championship. But again, we could say the same thing about Tyreek Hill. I mean, he won a Super Bowl, and his first thing was, hey, I want to be the highest paid receiver in the NFL. And the Chiefs were like, we can't do that. And he's like, okay, trade me. And then the Chiefs go win a Super Bowl, and Tyreek Hill, I'm not going to say he doesn't care, but he basically doesn't care because he's getting $30 million a year.
Right.
Like that's the thing is like, you know, but, and obviously the difference is DeAndre's never won a Super Bowl. So now you've got that question like, hey, what matters in your career? Being a guy that put up a bunch of stats on teams that never won, you know, the big one, or but you made a ton of money, or do you want to be the guy that, you know, helped Kansas City win their third Super Bowl in what, five seasons? Or do you want to be the guy that helped the Buffalo Bills win their first Super Bowl in franchise history? But let's be honest, I mean, the Bills are having an issue with Stephon Diggs right now.
Yeah.
So,
which is why Hopkins is a good fit there. Who do you think he ultimately ends up with? I was asked this on the radio when I had my radio spot on 1060 AM, And I said, based on the teams that he gave, I thought the Cowboys might be the team to make the move. And then that was based more on Jerry Jones's mentality for building a team. They have $10.5 million in cap space right now, and they play in an incredibly competitive division with the Philadelphia Eagles. And while the Cowboys are good, they certainly could, they could use another receiver. And but I also said maybe the Browns, but looking here at cap space with the Jets being up there, the Jets make a lot of sense too, especially if they want to make a move in the AFC East. They went and got Aaron Rodgers. They've got that budding defense. You've already got a young, great receiver in Garrett Wilson. He's a great fit in New York if that's the direction we're going to go, and they got the money to do it. I think, for me, I'm thinking that the Jets or the Cowboys are my two favorites if I had to pick and put money on.
I like the Cowboys. I like the Jets. What about the Detroit Lions? You know, they were a borderline playoff team.
They're going to be without JMO for a bit.
Yep, they have $24 million, just under $24 million in cap space. They're going to be without the guy that they drafted last year, knowing that he was hurt, that, you know, he was going to be available this year, and now he's unavailable because he can't stop gambling on sports. Yeah, I mean, they could make some sense. The other team that I've heard...
I question whether Dan Campbell wants that. Like, you want the talent.
Right, but you don't want the headache.
Right, right. And that was kind of the thing with Bill O'Brien. And now the Cardinals dealt with that. Cliff Kingsbury was more than okay to deal with it, but Dan Campbell's a little bit different. Is that he's trying to create, kind of like Jonathan Gannon is trying to create, a particular culture. And does Hopkins fit, even as great a player as? I'm not sure.
Let me throw an interesting team at you, the Jaguars.
You know that. That would be Reese. They've got $11 million in cap space. That's a possibility. You add him to Christian Kirk again in a South division that, you know,
very, very winnable.
Very winnable. But, you know, do they have the horses to compete with the Bengals and the Bills and the Chiefs? I like it. I think Trevor Lawrence would be able, like, he would love Trevor Lawrence.
I mean, that's just the thing, though, is like, if he ends up in, you know, say Carolina, who's got, you know, 20 plus million in cap space, is he really about winning a Super Bowl, or was he about like, hey, look, I got another
right
$18 million or whatever, you know, they end up paying him. So that'll be what's, I mean, that to me is the fascinating thing, because where he ends up is going to tell us more. And I think we know. And I know this sounds negative when I say it, and I really don't mean it that way, but like, I think we know who Hop is as a person, and like what fuels him from that perspective. He wants to be great. He wants to be a Hall of Famer, but he also wants to be looked at amongst his peers as a guy that, you know, always was in that top realm of getting paid. And I think that at the end is going to be what trumps everything else for him.
So I'm picking Jets or Cowboys as my two places where I think he'll end up. What are your?
I'm going to say Cowboys or Jaguars.
Okay, let's go with that. Coming up next from the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, Mr. Cardinals Talk on the Web. Let's talk about the receivers that are left on the roster, because now the outlook looks a little bit different. That's coming up next from Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red Podcast, Best of Cardinals Talk on the Web. The Cardinals now have a new look wide receiver room. And while obviously no DeAndre Hopkins changes things, is this receiving core NFL level? This is what it looks like at the top now. You've got Hollywood Brown. You've got Rondale Moore. You've got Greg Dortch, Zach Pascal. Then you add in Michael Wilson, who they just drafted. And after that, you've got your guys. If you're looking at a trio of Hollywood, Rondell, and Pascal, with Dortch and Wilson figuring into things. And Wilson is an intriguing guy because of some of the metrics that we talked about. And he offers the size. He does great at creating separation at the line of scrimmage because like we talked about the metrics that he had. He had an elite 10-yard split, elite, but a very meh 40 overall. But he wins quickly. What do you think of this group now? There's obviously you lose Hopkins, but is Hollywood good enough to be the guy all year?
I mean, for Hollywood, it's just about can he stay healthy for a full season, and that'll be, you know, determine things, and that'll be what is interesting as we move forward through this, is that, you know, again, that was another Steve Keim move, going and trading for Hollywood Brown, knowing DeAndre Hopkins was about to be suspended. And so how does that line up with what Monty Austin Ford, Jonathan Gannon, you know, Drew Petzig, those guys, how does that line up with what their vision is for this franchise moving forward? I think it's a great opportunity, and it's one of the reasons we haven't seen maybe the movement on a contract for Hollywood, is that this group, whether it be Buda Baker, who's, you know, an established star in the NFL, or a guy like Hollywood, they're looking at everything through the lens of like, does this guy fit, as you were talking about with Dan Campbell, the culture, the team first mentality we're looking for. And that's how they're making these decisions. And so I think it's a really great opportunity for Hollywood to show that he is one of those guys, that he can be one of those guys, and that they can trust him moving forward. And I think he's got a really great opportunity, you know, to do that.
And we saw when he was the guy, he was great. And that was with, that was with two or three times where he was just like the downfield connection was just off. Like Kyler's deep ball last year, I won't say that his throws were worse. Like he was, the numbers were terrible last year on his deep ball, but there were three or four times where, well, one, Hollywood dropped one. There was another one. He just looked over the wrong shoulder, and they didn't have the same type of rapport on the deep ball that they need to get back. And Hollywood gives you that if you can connect.
Yeah. And so it'll be interesting to see how that, you know, relationship continues to develop. But right now, like you said, yeah, it's not there, but it's something that they're looking to continue to build upon.
Rondell Moore's got to stay healthy. I wondered if Greg Dortch would be able to make the roster when Hopkins was here. Now it makes it a little bit easier. But Zach Pascal, I mean, he only had 15 catches last year, but we saw with the Colts, like there is some upside there. I'm not saying he's going to be dominant, but he had two consecutive years where he averaged more than 14 yards a catch. He had over 600 yards receiving and 85 touchdowns each year. And that was in 2019, 2020. And so, if he ends up being a number three, you can get production out of him, and they're going to want him on the field at least sometimes because they like what he adds to the run game. We know that he's a dog on special teams, and I don't know if I bet that he'll be able to crack the rotation. There's some upside with Michael Wilson, and the good thing with Wilson and Pascal is that you happen to get two guys with size.
Right, and that's the big thing that this room needed, you know, with or without Hopkins, you know, they needed more size, and now they get that a little more, and so that'll be the key for this, you know, kind of whole situation to see if they can continue to to develop and play at a high level.
And then, of course, the return of Zach Ertz, along with the development of Trey McBride, that gives them a lot of other options.
Two really good options
on tight ends. Because Ertz, not when Ertz was in Philly, now he doesn't. He was glad not to have to do it as much here, but he's a guy who can run X routes.
Right. And so, you know, when you're looking at it, you've just got a nice plethora of choices, but it, you know, they're two main and potentially three main guys, depending on how the Dortch development continues. And like you said, more staying healthy are smaller. And so guys like, you know, McBride, Ertz, obviously Pascal, and then the development of Michael Wilson will all be important moving forward to see if they're, you know, if they're a team that wins with just the Mighty Mites, or if they have some size and variation in their receiving corps.
Now, it's going to be interesting to see, especially with how they handle it, the quarterback situation in the meantime. But it sounds like they're going to run the ball. I think the offensive line has some potential there. We'll talk more battles down the line, like mini camp and training camp. There's some interesting battles going on there. Let's move off that and move on to some other topics. Coming up next on the Rise Up Sea Red Tim podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. Buda Baker, we've got some news on him. What's the latest with the All-Pro safety? That's coming up next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast, the best of our Cardinals talk on the web. We know Buda Baker asked for contract extension, was told no, he's unhappy, made a trade request, has not been at OTAs. However, on an interview with Cam Cox of 12 News, while he did not say specifically, I will report to mandatory training camp, he did say, I will be there when it's time to be there. I'll be there. I'll be all smiles. I'll be the same guy as always. And isn't that, so that everyone, what we've all taken from that, both locally and nationally, he will report for the mandatory mini camp, whether that means he's going to be on the field doing the workouts, that, but he's not going, it sounds like, he's simply playing the cards that he's allowed to play right now and will be there, will not be a distraction, will be there for mini camp, will be there for training camp. But let's be honest, did we expect anything different?
No, not based on his agent and how his agent does things. You know, this is an unfortunate situation, and I get it. You know, he's a very good player. And for the Cardinals, his value supersedes the positional value. And so that's what they're, you know, kind of playing right now is that, like, hey, if you're going to be bad, we need to make sure that we're at least getting paid to be part of a bad team. And it sucks that that's the way it has to be, but that's the way it is. I mean, you know, good players don't necessarily want to play on bad teams. And if they do, they want to make sure that they're heavily compensated for it.
Well, that, and the fact is, technically, he has zero security this year. Now, there are some securities league-wide that protect him. But, like, if he's just looking at his contract, what his agent's telling him is, hey, you have no security because there's no guaranteed money. There are things that protect players like this. So if he were to get healthy, if he were to get injured in camp and it was bad enough, could they cut him? Yes, but he would end up on IR where he'd still get paid. If he were in a situation where he got a little tweaked up, something got minor injury, they then let him heal and then cut him, he gets no money. He doesn't have to worry about that because of the caliber player that he is. So even if he got an ankle injury, this is not like where you're worried about a middling guy. Let's say Darryl Williams last year. He was on a multi-year deal, no guarantees left, and you were questioning his role on the team. And so if he gets a minor injury, then you get him saved, you get him healthy, and then you cut him, So you're off the hook from any money. Buddha's not in that position. Buddha's a star on this team. They love him. There is no way he's not making the money that he's got, even though it's technically guaranteed. Even though it's not guaranteed the contract, it's basically guaranteed, as long as he doesn't turn into an idiot, basically.
Right. And so that's, I mean, it's just one of those situations you have to look at and take with a grain of salt of like, we get it. Like, he wants more money, but right now we're trying to figure out what the best thing for this franchise is and what they're going to do moving forward. And I mean, like I said, it's just unfortunate that that's how this is all playing out. Right. But
I mean, we've seen it before. Like, just because a team player makes a trade quest doesn't mean he's going to get traded. You know, Chandler Jones requested a trade, didn't get traded. Patrick Peterson requested a trade, didn't get traded. Granted, they were in the last year. They were in the last year. And Patrick just wanted to be moved somewhere else. But Buddha's got 2 years left. If he's still the stud that he is, I totally expect him to get extended after the season as they move forward, looking at 2024 and beyond. He's the – like, it would be – now, for a new coaching staff, new general manager, it would look really bad for them to – talk about Buddha the way they've talked about him this offseason, then to have him ball out like he has in years past, and then to trade slash just not sign, not give him a contract extension. That would be like, that'd be egg in the face. It would look really bad for this organization because it would be for the organization itself, publicly, the players in the locker room, when you give so much praise to a guy like Buddha Baker, and then you do not take care of him after, you know, He balls out. Now he's only a year left on this deal, which is the standard time to extend a contract. He's still playing at an extremely high level, and you don't reward him. That would look really bad.
Yeah, it would, and that's what they're trying to, you know, figure out and move in that direction. And so I think that's where we're at right now, is like, how does this all fit together to make sure that things are, you know, done in a way that that makes the team look good, but also doesn't, or I shouldn't say makes the team look good, but helps the team, but also doesn't hinder a player, right? And
right.
That's, I mean, it's a tough line to walk. Let's be honest. It's just not something that most teams have to go through. And it's unfortunate that this is where the Cardinals are, but like we talked about at the beginning, you make decisions based on your past, and you know, Monty Austin Ford is looking at this and going, yeah, you know, we love Buddha, he's a great player, and we want him on this roster, but we're not in a position where we can just continue to hand out contracts willy-nilly without, you know, stopping and kind of thinking about it.
Coming up next on the Rise Up Here podcast with Sir Carlos Talk on the Web, we will talk about our final segment on the show. Is it a tank job? That's what everyone else is saying. That's coming next on Rise Up Sea Red. We're back on the Rise Up Sea Red podcast. Best our Cardinals talk on the web. The word on the street is that the Cardinals are tanking, that they are looking at Caleb Williams from USC. He's going to be in the conversation. They want a top two pick, and that is what their goal is. I hate the idea of that. Organizationally, I get the notion of tanking. I understand that. I refuse to believe that a brand new coach and GM are going to purposely cheer for losses. I understand it might be the result that happens, and then you're okay with them. Year one with Cliff Kingsbury, they understood it was about building for the future. They had a brand new rookie quarterback. They understood that. So they weren't cheering losses. They just knew losses were going to come. Do I believe the organization is purposely putting itself in a position to have a top two pick? I don't think so. I do not think that is the philosophy, like some people would like to say, that they're actively cheering for double zero. If they get a winless team, perfect. No, I don't believe that. I don't believe it at all, because it completely undermines what you want. Players don't tank, coaches don't tank, because their job's dependent on it. Is Austin Fort purposely tanking this year? I don't like to call it that. What Kyle Odegaard calls it is a roster teardown, and I like the notion, and it just, the losses might be inevitable, and maybe they are consigning themselves, they're resigning to the idea that they might be a bottom two team in the league, but I do not believe that is the goal.
Yeah, I agree with you 100%. I don't think that they're trying to lose. I don't think that they're trying to be an awful team. What I think they're trying to do is, I think what they're trying to do is change the culture and the philosophy. And in doing so, it's going to be kind of painful, kind of slow, and kind of ugly. But it's about how are they competing under these new circumstances. And when you look at, you know, the team from a cultural standpoint in the Detroit Lions, you know, in Dan Campbell's first season, they went 3-13-1. And everybody was like, yeah, they're on the right trajectory. They ended up with the second pick in the draft. They take Aiden Hutchinson. And they continue to grow. Remember, the Lions, and then they went 9-8 last year, finished second in the NFC North. And let's not forget that the Lions were 1-6 after they lost to the Miami Dolphins. They had already had their bye week, and they finished the season 8-2, including sweeping the Green Bay Packers.
They were a scrappy team. They were the terrible Bears. Defensively, and that defense finally started coming together late in the year.
And that's what people have to remember, is that that is what the goal is for the Cardinals. It's not to be immediate contenders. They're trying to build something that is long term. If it works, that's great. But that's something that we talked about. We have not seen from this organization is a long term plan. So we'll see how this works out, but at least they're going into it with like, hey, this is our plan. This is what we're trying to accomplish.
It's like, I do not believe for a second that if they were to win 5 or 6 games, that they would be disappointed. I think kind of culturally, this is why they're talking about that. They're trying to win the right way. They're trying to build a team the right way. So they want high character guys. So guys that that will always compete no matter what, even if they're bad, but they will compete, which is the type of player you want. And from there, you can build and add higher end talent. Because look at right now. Their defensive line, very questionable. Their cornerbacks, questionable. Their pass rushers, young and unproven. Defensively, they have, you've got high end talented linebacker, top performers at safety, and then after that, there are so many question marks. Offensively, you're rolling with the backup quarterback, but their receivers are solid. Their tight ends are solid. They like their running back. They love James Conner. And running back, honestly, you can get production from a lot of different ways. And they are building an offensive line that should protect whoever is behind them. And so they're trying to set things right. They're not going to cheer for losses. I think they want to get in the right direction. The notion that they're going to hold back Kyler because of how the season is going, I don't like to do that. I think that's foolhardy. Like the idea, things are going bad, so we're just going to hold him out till midseason. Kyler wants to play. Now, organizationally, they're going to wait till he is fully healthy and able to handle mentally the return. But I still don't, I don't believe that's going to be midseason and beyond. Even if that's the kind of the plan of the Cardinals, I think Kyler is going to push them because especially since the organization needs to see Kyler return. So if they need more than a half season out of Kyler, if he's healthy, to show them that he is in fact going to be the quarterback they can go moving forward. Because if he isn't and they are as bad, they need to know whether They need to know whether they need to draft a quarterback, right? And as much excitement as they have about Kyler Murray, I think that's the thing, is that I think they believe they have the quarterback already. And so if you have the quarterback already and you have the foundation of a team that you like and that you believe can begin to compete, then you go out and go all out in 2024 to add to really be big players. But with the draft status that they have, the conversation then has to be, so we can't just hold Kyler Murray out because we need to know moving forward. And I know that they're not planning on drafting a quarterback this year. That's not their goal, but they're in a position where they could. And so the notion that they're going to hold out Kyler longer than he needs to be out, I think that's absurd because Kyler's not going to stand for it. One, I think if they purposely held him out longer than he thinks he should be out, you know what's going to happen? They'll lose Kyler Murray in terms of, like, and I think some of the issues that they had last year is Kyler and Cliff, or Kyler and the organization, weren't on the same page. Is I don't think he trusted them to be doing the right thing. And I think they have to keep Kyler on board. And thus far, he loves everything. The new head coach, the coaching philosophy of JG matches up with what Kyler wants to do. But if they're just going to say, no, I know you're cleared, I know you're ready to play, hold on. Just because. There has to be a legitimately good reason to do it.
Yeah, and I think that's important that, you know, they want to feel like everybody's on the same page. And so we'll see how that works out, because I do think that that's the goal right now. But it's always, you know, obviously for Jess and I, it's been decades, but that's always how new relationships start, right? Like, everything's great. You love her because they're not your ex, and everything, you know, you love everything about them. And then it's like, then you start to find the flaws. And that's kind of where we'll see how that goes. But right now it's, you know, they're all on the same page. They all have the same vision, and that's what matters. And that's kind of where we're at for this whole thing before, you know, before it gets ugly.
And so I don't call it a tank job. I call it it's rebuilding. Sure, it's a rebuild. I don't think it's necessarily a long-term rebuild, but if they were to take the roster that they have, win four, like, if in terms of betting terms, if they hit the over this year, no one in the organization is going to be upset. And there's not anyone in the organization that's going to be thinking, dang it, I wish we'd been bad enough to have the top two pick. They might get that anyway with the Texans, but
right.
It's way better. It's way better for this coaching staff if, with the talent that is on the roster now, can compete and win 5-6 games, even 7 games. It's way better for them moving forward if they can do that with the talent that they have, because that, they know what they are. They know what they are. I'm sure they do. And
right. And so they just have,
it builds JG's philosophy. You set him up to be a long-term coaching option because you bought in early. He's not just saying, hey, keep competing. No, they'll already see it.
Yeah. So it'll be interesting to see how this all plays out, because I think that's where they're at right now, but we have to see how it goes and where it goes to. But right now it looks like the right decision and they're moving in the right way.
And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Rise Up Cigarette Podcast. We'll be back next week with one or two shows. We'll see how the off-season schedule goes. We've got, you know, family trips and things like that. So that's kind of what. But we'll be back next week. There'll be other stuff to talk about. We can rant and rave about rankings and listings. And before long, we'll hit the actual dead part of the off-season. I'll start doing some opponent previews. So that's Seth Cox. I'm Jess Root. This is the Rise Up Cigarette Podcast, episode 426. Thanks for listening, as always. Thanks for listening to the latest edition of the Rise Up Cigarette Podcast. Listen to previous episodes and subscribe to the show on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher Radio, Audioboom, or many other podcast platforms, so shows are delivered directly to your mobile device. Please give the show a 5-star rating and always support the sponsors who support the show. We'll be back soon for the best hour of Cardinals talk on the web. Rise Up Red Sea, Be Red Sea Red, and of course, Rise Up Sea Red.